Well, as usual, I've lost track of where we are in whatever series I'm doing. So we'll call this Fallacy Whatever. And this is a complicated one. It's not complicated as itself, but the way that it is weaponized is devious as fuck. So, false equivalence, here we go. I was born in 1972. I'm old. And I was born woke. Not metaphorically, not in hindsight. I was awake, wide-eyed, and watching when I was 2 years old, watching grown-ups laugh at politics. They called it a dog and pony show. And something about that laughter felt off, not because they were wrong, but because they sounded as if they had already given up, not just on candidates, but on the whole idea of participation, on the entire proposition of self-rule. They were mocking the art of trying, and they were the best weapons that could ever have been constructed to tear down democracy. But then again, they weren't wrong. Both sides are the same, because modern politics isn't about persuasion, it's about triggering. Each base is a fan club for an identity. You don't vote for policy, you vote to stay seen under the right canopy. On the right, Christian nationalism, power washed and parables, the promise of order through threat. On the left, winks towards socialism. We're the smart ones, right? Just enough morality to stall a riot, but somehow never enough to stop the machine. It's not belief, it's branding. It's not governance, it's a goddamn product funnel. Get the base out, trigger the other side, hold the line. Nothing about care, nothing about consequence, just dog, just dog, just pony, just pony. But they can dance. And we like to watch, don't we? This is where false equivalence begins, not in logic, in despair. Not because people are too dumb to know better, but because they're too smart to keep pretending. They do not want to get caught falling for this obvious shit. So they give up ahead of time. It's a preemptive surrender. So they smirk, they mutter. Dog and pony show, like it's an inside joke among survivors. And I understand that many times many empires have fallen and the people just picked up their own grain and kept on keeping on. But when we are no longer taught history, we cannot accurately judge whether this is that same track. So I'll tell you, it's not. I actually had a real education. So a lot of those people, they don't even vote, and that's factored in. But you want to know when it really went sideways? Let's go back, let's go back, let's go way on back. Yonder in history, a guy named Hammurabi, you know the one, little stone tablet boy, finger to the sky. This is the beginning of civilization by divine mandate. No, this is the moment theft became divine by mandate. Because these laws weren't written to protect any vulnerable class. They were written to protect the accounts payable department, to keep the workers where they're told, to protect landowners from loss, including runaway slave, or I forget which law it is, but there's actually a law that covers what happens to you if you seduce and house one of your fellow citizens' slaves. Last slave laws. So this is about guaranteeing debt, and this fossilizes class structure. From Hammurabi to Biden, Babylon to Beltway, it's all been the same project. Extract from those who make, market to those who comply, manage those who rebel. That's, of course, all below the elite, because in the end, the entire job, this whole machine, is designed to get the grain into the bellies of the elite. That's it. It's designed to make sure that the people who can afford it continue to control the resources. So that's why both sides feel the same, because both sides serve that same flow. The grain must reach the few. That's the rule, that's the game. You remember the Tower of Babel? There's elements of the myth that suggest we all spoke the same language, and that was something that was either growing as we collaborated or something that was taken away from us at the end of this story. So, mankind can understand each other, and they use this amazing thing to coordinate trades and build a goddamn building that's actually a stairway to heaven, literally. And the higher it gets, the more annoyed God gets in the story. But the real threat was never the height. The real threat was the harmony, that man could build something together to maybe meet God and understand the stories that they have been told about why they existed. They coordinated, they shared a clock, they knew when the rain was coming. They weren't rebels, they were aligned. So God flicked the tower like a paper football across a middle school desk, because it shouldn't have been possible, because cooperation among man is always the real threat. The Tower of Babel isn't a cautionary tale for us. It's a warning to power. It's a reminder that the moment the subclasses, the other people, communicate, that tower will rise again. And every system built since, every filing cabinet, every zoning code is engineered to prevent that. Not to stop rebellion, but to stop coordination. We were never punished for the pride of believing that we could meet God. We were punished for discovering that in our eagerness, we could plan and execute together. If we build the tower again, floor by floor, word by word, all of us speaking, thinking, acting together, what we'll find at the top isn't a throne. It's a mirror. And in that mirror, we'll see the same truths our ancestors saw when they seeded clouds for rain. We'll see the structure of the atmosphere. We'll see the earth from a new perspective. We'll see that there was no Sky Daddy, no pearly gates, no final reckoning written in gold for those of us who suffered voluntarily during our lives on Earth. Because they sell that to people. They say if you are devout, if you obey, that the reward in heaven is greater than anything possible on Earth. And these people believe it because their feet are bleeding, their hands are bleeding, and their brains are desperately asking simple questions. Simple questions that get answered by trust God, let go, let God. And the loyalists, the myth clingers, the ritual marketers, those who sold the palace in the clouds, those who thought that they were buying themselves quarters in the palace in the clouds, they will have to invent a whole new ontology to explain why the gates don't glisten. They'll say it's abstract. They'll say it's metaphor. They'll say the kingdom of God was never meant to be literal. It lives in each of our hearts. How convenient, but you'll know. You'll know it was always theater. The real gates, the only ones that matter, are the ones inside us, the ones that block communication, that preserve silence. So, what's up with no pearly gates? Simple. They were supposed to keep us looking up while we handed over the harvest. And now what? Now what? Now we remember. We remember that this didn't start with your grandparents or the Cold War or the Constitution. It started with a slab of rock and a rule book to keep the fields quiet. It starts with a flick of the tower and a fear of shared speech. And it ends when we build the tower again. not to storm heaven, but to speak in one voice at last.